only way they can go in there is by asking permission. Now, we've been thinking about that because there's a lot of pressure. What do you think about that? But the natives can hunt during hunting season, you know. You know, this is private land, you know. We can do that, but we haven't yet done it, you know. We've been talking about it, though.
I think it's a very good idea, because...
Take it in need basis, you know.
Sure, that's the only thing we live on, is subsistence.
We get permits out, you know. And that can be done right today.
Can I ask you a question? When you specify natives, do you mean in the corporation or do you mean native in Alaska?
I think, to me, we're all natives. I don't like to say Gussel is different, because we're all natives, you know. To me, that's how I would treat it, you know. But I would say this, though, Gail. I would prefer that the shareholders or natives up here use the game first, and then whatever they decide, that, you know, a lot of moose being killed, no control, you know. I would say then you would have another round and say, yes, we have these limited amounts, you can come in here in our lands, but they can sure go to state land and hunt anytime they want, you know. But we're all natives, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to look at it that way. I'm no different from being on barrel, you know. But those are some of the things that we're discussing, too, to try to... I know there's 200... Somebody told us yesterday when the 200 and some boats come up last year from just from the coast, you know. That's a lot of pressure in this area, moose pressure.
And the boats go down, sure, or moose in them.
See, we won't have that very long.
Sure.
That keeps up. You know?
The moose population will really go down, it's like...
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people's here live on subsistence.
Now let me ask you this: the law also says we got 1 million acres. If the people of the shareholders would tell the board next year to divide the 1 million acres and give each one, that can be done too, you know. Meaning everybody would get let's say 1,000 acres. We could do that too, you know. And then you could turn around whatever you want to do with that land, and what you would do is dissolve the corporation, dissolve it, take it out, you know. But before we do that, we could give you each whatever 1 million acres divided into 1,120 shareholders. We could do that too. What do you think about that? Each native would get 1,000 acres somewhere. That can be done. I don't think that's a good idea myself. It would, if we were talking about selling our stock, that's what we would be doing. You wouldn't have any control who sold 1,000 acres somewhere and don't know what value it is, you know. But there's a lot of people thinking about that.
I was going to bring this up, but how far up Holikna is our
land?
Yeah.
Peter, this is my cabin.
The side of that beaver.
Beaver.
Beaver Mountain.
Yeah.
Or Beaver Hill, whatever.
Yeah.
Just to the side of about
1/4 mile. Yeah. It doesn't go too far.
Yeah. To Holikna, it's about Beaver Mountain, Beaver Hill, and main river is a little bit of Enoch or Enoch.
Does that answer it?
Mm-hmm. How about these people that are building fishing and hunting lodge? What's that got to be?
Mm-hmm.
How are we supposed to control those?
Yeah, I've heard about it. They're in state land up here. This is Beaver Hill here, nothing like that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You know them homesteaders up there? right through Holitna, whatnot, wherever they go. They have homesteads. The state of Alaska gave them a homestead there. There's not a damn thing we as a corporation can do. But we sure can voice our opinion and have a shareholder meeting and saying the people don't like it. But they have every right to put a cabin or whatever they want there.
You mean they could from their homestead, they could go someplace else and make a home, another home, and build a fishing lodge or hunting lodge
if
there?
They own that. Say they're over here in Holitna, and they got another piece of ground over here that his wife homesteaded. Sure, there's nothing. He can do that. Mm-hmm. There's nothing we could do. Only really control we have, and it's some degree, is our lands, you know. They can't come in here, over here, and make a cabin without us going to them and say, you can't do that.
Do you know about that house that's above here, you know, not very far from Pete Melick's, that when Gasak got this house up here in Holitna?
On the left-hand side of the river?
On the left side, gone.
For the last 6 years or so, somebody from Fairbanks.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
He got two tents. Once in a while, he come down, him and his wife, both flies. So
they have a little house there.
Right in the...
Right?
No, I never heard it.
Well, whose land is it on?
It's ours.
The village's land supposed to be according to our...
Nothing is conveyed, you know, to any individual. Yeah. Maybe a land allotment, but I don't know. But I can find out. I didn't know nothing about it. Nixon should report those things, you know. Crooked
Cajuns, right? I talked to Jim Wick about it, and he said he was going to look into it, but we haven't.
Who did?
Jim Wick.
Okay,
We never heard.
And also, this lady from Maniac, Debbie Lee,
yeah.
I asked him, approached him a couple of Cajuns, and he said he's going to look into it, but no feedback yet. So
okay.
I don't know.
I'll find out real myself,
That's all.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, anything like that, let me know. Call me, Peter. This, you know, I can get to Jim that way, you know. Mm-hmm. You bawl me out, I bawl him out, right? That's the way it goes.
What mostly people are concerned here, the villagers, is they're getting too many, the lodges up in that area where we, the headwater of our village, mm-hmm. are hunting rivers.
Mm. Yeah, excuse me a second. Do you mind stepping up to the table, and because we wanted to get this? Sorry, Mr. Zakari. You want to start again?
Yeah, I was very concerned, not only me, but the older people, and also the young people. Like my son, he's 14 years old. A couple of nights ago, we were sitting down at the supper. I was talking about it, how it used to be in my life when I was back in 40s and 50s. You know, the people were just like one big happy family, go anywhere and make cabins.
You go back that far, you're a young man.
But now, even we go across the river, can't make nothing no more. Can't even make no fish camps. Nonetheless, we ask permissions from our corporations or from some other village councils or the traditionals. And then he's my 14-year-old son, what will happen after 1991? And I said, that's very scary, because us peoples, the natives and the peoples, not only natives, but white peoples will be affected. And the most of us out here in the bushes were lack of education, and we don't know how to deal with the things from the people that's coming from the lower 48. Because they've been through that down the lower 48 way before us. And it's kind of scary. So my little son was saying, if I ever did him a land or something, he will try to keep it for himself or for his kids. Like Evelyn Thomas bring up a very interesting thought a while ago. The fear of the shareholders, if we happen to be deceased, which we will be in the future, all the shareholders die off, the land will be just nobody's, and our kids or our great-grandchildren cannot touch it. So if there were some way to protect that, to enroll them, I think that's the best thing we can do. And another thing, for my kids and them other kids, I'll talk to them, because I'm working here as the custodian in school. I corner one kid once in a while, maybe 11, 12 years old. and ask him what he would do if we have a right to sell our land in after 1991. Well, the kid said, well, if I want a new machine or a big fast boat, jet boat, I sure will sell some of my portion of the land. Because he wants to enjoy his life. I don't blame him. So like Tiny was saying, if we can divide shareholders and the money, I think that will be the work in the best. Even if we have to share our share, the land will still be ours. But that's kind of getting off in this, the Hunter's Lodge or whatever up in Holitna. That will be a problem in the future. It's starting now. Because some homesteaders, because some old poor old native old woman went up to pick bears there several years ago, actually about 3-4 summers ago, where he picked bears all the time. That was old Missinka's car. So we landed. She's 64, 65 years old. She took her basket and go up on top the Usak. Mm-hmm. She started picking. Pretty soon the motor come. I landed. It was one of the homesteaders. He said, what you doing? Picking berries. He said, you're trespassing. This is my land. And so the poor old woman was confused. How come 40, 50 years I was picking berries in the same place and all of a sudden I can't do it? And he was really heartbroken. And his sons and his daughter said, that's just the beginning of it.
Right.
And these hunters, also these sports hunting sites, they will do the likewise in the future. If they're deeded to a certain amount of area, and they'll mark and make boundary. He said, nobody can hunt here, not unless you pay or you got my permission. So that's kind of scary. So that's all I have to add it on to what I had before. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for adding that on.
You see, if we had a bigger map, where he's talking about is the Holitna River, crystal clear water. For eons of times, the natives have used that area for hunting. My dad had trapping beaver there all his life and everything, and so is everybody else's. And in 1967, state of Alaska, apparently, and I still don't know how they did it, it was conveyed to them from the federal government for the becoming a state under statehood act. Took that and I don't know if they even had hearing, Peter, that I know of. I wasn't too involved in them days, but what happened is there were about 22 individuals, Caucasians, went in and applied for these right in the Holitna River. Now, both sides are land holdings now, and that's what he's talking about. They're the first ones to put land trespass. And he's saying that an old woman that picked berries for 50 years there, and she is about 75 years old. All of a sudden says this guy up here said, well, you can't trespass, you know. The very same place that we hunted all our lives, not our short lives, but our father's lives, you know. And that's going to happen. That is, it's happening. But the same goddamn time that they're saying this to us, they want to use our land for nothing. You take the state government, state of Alaska, right here at this airport, give us the land. We don't want to buy it from you natives. We don't want to pay the gravel from you natives. In fact, we'd like to just forget about you natives. That's the attitude. So we have to survive. We have to take this instrument in myself and get familiar with it and do the Western world system. Whether we like it or not, that's what it's going to come to. Know the system and use it to our advantage. That's only way we're going to survive, as I see it, is if the act doesn't change somehow to protect us. There's no way in hell we're going to survive. Even if this corporation, the Kuskokwim Corporation, had all kinds of money, it won't survive because people are going to sell it.
Did you want to say something, ma'am? You're welcome.
Give us your name and where you live.
I'm Angela Andrinoff. I live in Sleetmute.
And you're a shareholder in the Kuskokwim Corporation and in Chilista also, I guess.
Yes.
Well, what do you think about this land claims thing? And the has it done you any good? Has it worked for you? Or
the way they're saying now is that, you know, the land claims that we put in for, they don't, they're not going to give them to us because there's no buildings on it. You know, every time we use those lands, we don't want to mess them up. You know, we just want to keep them for us and our families. I've got four boys, you know, they're all small. They're going to need some place when they grow up.
Yeah, when you talked about they wouldn't give you the land unless there were buildings on it, were you talking about native allotments or?
Yeah.
Did you have one?
Yes. I applied for native allotment because long ago, you know, they never used to have that. Everybody used the land just like it was theirs. You know, you don't have to put no marker on it. And people always knew where it was. And we need it. The government seems like it's always trying to take everything away from us, and I don't like that. That's all I've got.
Yeah. What about the possibility of people selling their shares in 1991? If they sell their shares, if a majority sell their shares, then Native people will lose their land. But the people that sell their shares will get some money for them. What do you think? Should they sell them, or should they not be allowed to sell them, or any views on that?
Well, if they're going to sell them, they should sell them to the corporation first, mm-hmm. not to white people. You know, because they're just going to spoil it. It's already starting.
How do you mean it's starting?
Well, you can't go upriver like you used to. You know, it's some places where we stop and have tea while we're traveling. There's homesteaders on there now. Mm-hmm. You have to find new places to have tea, and it's so different. You know, long time ago, everybody used to share everything. And now they're starting to get stingy, thinking about, you know, it's so different now than it was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I just wish they changed things to our benefit, then, you know, not what some of the things that the white people put in here are not very good. You know, they don't think about how we feel.
Anything else?
No.
Well, thanks very much. Just take a break and see if anybody else wants to testify later today. Well, that was good. That was interesting. Very helpful to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, just give me your name.
My name is Vaughn Bazell. I'm mm-hmm. a teacher in Sleetmute. And one concern that kind of bothered me about the 1991 Act is I'm not that sure if it's right or not, but from what I understand is the way it's set up is if the regional corporation fails, you know, if something happens to it and it fails, then everything underneath it will collapse. And I don't know, I think they should, there should be a safeguard in it somewhere against the line, because the people that are going to be hurt are the native people that are living in the small villages. And the way I understand it is that the regional corporation controls all the mineral rights and has access, you know, has public domain type access if they need to get on the land and that. And I think that that's giving a lot, not quite as much control to the local level. Maybe it's needed. I'm not that sure. I'm not that well on, read up on it, but I can really see where that could be damaging. If something would happen to the regional corporation, the people could lose everything right down the line.
Well, the regional corporation, if it failed, if it went bankrupt, and its assets, including its land, could be seized by its creditors. And you're quite right, they own the subsurface title to the land in all these villages. There are some exceptions to that in Alaska, but only a few. So that could be a real disaster. It would mean that the subsurface of this village would be owned by interests that might not have the same goals in mind as native people. That's true.
Another thing is that the taxing of the land for 1991, that's a big issue that they've already said that I can see where that would really affect decisions, because most of the assets of the corporations are in land holdings. And if they're taxed like regular corporations, I can see where there's going to be a lot of problem. I also think that there should be an extension of at least 10 years, because you're taking a very complex business structure that took the white culture 200 years to develop. You're throwing it on a native population and saying, okay, learn it in 10 years. And another thing is you're giving multi-million dollar assets to people and saying, okay, now if you make a mistake, it's going to be mistakes of millions of dollars. Whereas corporations that have succeeded in the white culture have succeeded because they started off small and they were the ones that built themselves. They were the ones that, learned the system. They're not the ones that failed.
Yeah.
And I think it's really if you're going to give the extension, you got to have the people work at it and keep working at it to understand the system continually. Another thing is on the educational standpoint is you're talking about, I really feel that it should be, you should give them at least one generation in a corporate structure before you say, all right, bam. Give them one generation of learning it and helping them out. That is, if you're concerned about the native, if they're concerned about the natives maintaining their corporations and maintaining their lands. If they're not concerned about stealing their lands from them, which I can see is what can happen very easily in 1991. But again, I don't know that much about the Native Claim Land Act. No, I don't know how the safeguards that are coming in, and that, but I think that they should be coming in.
Okay. That, where are you from?
Originally?
Yeah.
Wisconsin.
How long have you been here?
This is my second year here.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, that's a good point about corporations in the lower 48 usually started out very, very small and worked their way up, whereas here, millions of dollars were dumped on them, and they had to make those decisions right away instead of progressing in that direction.
And if you look at the failure rate in the small corporations, and that is a big failure rate there.
Yeah.
And the ones that have succeeded have learned the game the hard way or whatever. And they're the ones that these corporations are going to be dealing with.
Okay, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.
signing a cross that you have to
do? I do not really understand.
Can we have your name, ma'am?
Stasi.
Do you live here in Sleipmute?
Yeah.
All your life?
Yeah, I was born in Sleipmute.
I guess you've seen some changes in your time then.
Yes.
That's your native claim settlement. Im gut 1971 nahm ich ihren Erden, ich leid in Roland redet.
Im Krankenhaus. Kann ich mich heute glücke artig?
Ja, mein ihren Mitglied war. Im gut ihren Erbut, born als gut after 71 nahm ich.
Ja.
Da mag gut in Roland redet. Von gut, vor den Kassad schrei gut, Jean Hook, I'm good. You know, Angu Yachtum in Roland Redaki. In the Aka Kandel, I thought in Roland Ciganach, in Roland Cigalan. Change a regular Gutana, maybe. You best and Kasaj is good with we can translate it, you know.
That was my mama's grand. Dana in Nasuyagutla Rolta. Hocket be a company renamed in Pig's Cluck or, you know, in Atus Cluck, those boys knew it. My mom don't eat a little long time. Uku Babam, you know Babam Stora, Jackie Bam, Uka did that middle basement Nachtam. Dana,
last year, him good application at Bishorput, one good corporation Naput, you know. Mava died for him, not him wake up, Debbie Lee, died. Donna Kaimil.
Don't mantle not. Donna Suya would lag in a kit tempos at all you like. Nanny Nidless Chia Natan. Kunuku took laughing at it and in that. Because Donna on a pea we are a carta me in a donu it a swan. My boys, Pong knew it. I used to cut so I won't let them make housing there. Charlie, you tell me after me. No room, Bill Lambda.
Debbie Lee, I'll tell Debbie.
Yeah, Dana, I want it. I always forget it. Never think about it. Getting old, can't think nothing.
But for Dun Yugovki Kassanun Sudan Sharon
taught in Kandalaya, 1991, even 6 years more, 8 years more. Kaitu numyon tana. Asikan was asid asikan ritan. Tun kubni kasamun sharatan. But picking ritat nim pit you wouldn't have anything, you know.
Tun you meet it.
Tun
kubni kaspichiks.
She was briefly saying it really deals with the corporation about her 14C1 and 2 here, that she missed the application. That what happened was last year we sent out from the corporation applications to identify every native that was living in 1971 residing so that we can transfer the land. And that's what she was talking about, that she didn't get one of those applications or wasn't here. And Debbie Lee and Jim Wick, that handles all this stuff, will be notified to give her an application. And I was trying to ask her about shares and stuff. She just gets confused. She really doesn't know. But trying to explain that she could lose her shares, and she says that she would. She just don't understand it, but she knows that she don't want to sell her share, you know, for shares.
Okay, well, thanks, ma'am. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Debbie Lee can not
see. Yeah, damn, what could him be?
Divorce, I can ask you, no?
After
Iraq, yeah. See, it's very complicated. Even we do this in native, it just they confuses them more just to talk to them about what share is, because she can barely, you know, even if she does say a few words in English, shares, you know, try to tell them she has 100 shares here, 100 shares, it just confuses. I mean, she doesn't.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of that, you know.
Well, we've had about a dozen folks that is not bad, and it's been quite useful. I guess so. Maybe, Mr. Fredrickson, you'd tell us about the Kuskokwim Corporation, your involvement, how it came about, and what it's doing now, its activities and so on.
Yeah. If we go back 2-3 years later and to familiarize you a little more, in 1971 I was working as a construction throughout Alaska in a construction field, and I got involved in at about 1973-74 went to work with Celista Corporation at that time to enroll and talk about the Native Claims Act to the 56 villages that comprised Celista, and explaining the stocks and what lands or how the process is going to work and so forth. And at that time we cut up Celista into 10 administrative units because it was so huge, and my administrative unit was designated to me from Kalskag to Stony River, including Lyme. And at that time, we had a disbursement from the federal government, and all Chalista took a share, of course, and then the villages got shares of the funds. I started working with the villages that time in the unit, and setting up accounts and so forth, and at that time they were all individual corporations. My dealings with them and looking at the other corporation didn't take very long to realize that if we were to continue as individual corporations, it wouldn't take too long before the money is depleted, because the Act says that we were to have audits and so forth and kept track of where the monies were. The instance I was enrolled when Georgetown was a little individual corporation with 28 people, I believe, were enrolled there. And we got a sum of $34,000 and 69,000 acres of land. And our audits at that time, just keeping the money, keeping track of the 34,000 that we received, was in a bank and were required to have an audit at that time was something like $18,000. And when we first started. So by looking at that and knowing some of these little villages, they just wouldn't survive. I start right away talking about merging these 10 villages together. And at that time, the amendment was introduced to Congress, as you're aware of, to do that. And right after that, in 77, I believe, 1977, we start talking very seriously then about merging. It took me 1 year to explain after drawing up the articles and how the structure was going to work to inform the people why we should merge. And a lot of study was put into that of if we didn't merge, what would happen to our monies? And drafts were done on if we were to merge, how much assets we would have after we merged. So that was talked about, like I said, for a year. And we did finally vote, like in a shareholders meeting, special meeting. And out of the 1,220 people, 98% of those voted to merge. What we did was we didn't quabble of how much money Antioch had versus Georgetown. We thought it was we had all our money intact at that time. So we didn't quabble over you had 69,000 versus we had 110,000 in Antioch. And all the land and all the assets were put into one pot. And we do have right today, our bylaws state that each village would have a representative or a board member to the Kuskokwim Corporation. And yearly we have an election. And we do have right today investments. We have one investment in Antioch pertaining to an office complex. And an apartment building. When we started formulating our business plans, I was very hesitant to go to the villages and start up a store or fuel tanks because native people already had those businesses. I always think that corporations shouldn't go in there and compete with another native individual when that function is already there. And if you notice in going up and down this river, the corporation has never went into a village and put up a store, for instance, because it isn't right for the corporation to do that. And that's been my philosophy. Therefore, we then start looking outside of our area to identify some of these purchased United Transportation. It's a transportation company that brings freight from Bethel all the way to McGrath and down the coast. And that was a big acquisition. We do have a lot of studies done of what other potential businesses we can start in our region. I've mentioned it before, some of it is timber. Some of it is gravel operations. We know that agriculture is very good potential here, but the base, all the conclusions of all the studies we've done in this area come to a conclusion that there is just not enough people to support that business. For instance, sawmill would be a good one. We have done studies on our timber and we know exactly how much timber we have here. And the conclusion of that study was that the base people just wouldn't make it. The logs, when we turned them out, would be so expensive, prohibitive, if we were to make a profit. Now that is on hold now, and same as gravel operations. Gravel have more potential than the timber operation. And hopefully by maybe joint venturing with Chilista Corporation, we could do something on gravel especially. But we do have businesses in Anchorage. We have office complex in Anchorage and a couple or four or five lots right downtown that we bought years back. We have done a lot of other things that the corporation is trying to do. For instance, the home site, the people that we are working right today, identifying all the native people that we are to transfer to under the 1971 Act, says that those people that lived in the village will get a title to their land, 14C1 and 2. We are in the process right today of doing that. In fact, the first process was right here in Fleetmute, and we set up a committee of people. The board didn't want to do it. We might have this conflict of interest, so the board made policies to that effect, and a lot of policies to implement the law. The law says that you must reside in 1971 in order to get that piece of property, and we made some policies. Before we did that, we went out to the villages and told them, these are the policies we're going to go by when we start distributing this land to you. And the first round was done here, and I heard through our reports that almost everybody got those ones and twos that qualified from this committee, comprising of all the, from Crooked Creek. They elected five people to sit on this committee. Then at the last board meeting, we decided that those people that didn't qualify and we have a lot of residents here, just like this lady we're talking about, her kids don't have anything. They're natives or didn't qualify for any piece of ground. Our idea there is to identify all those people that didn't qualify under C1 and 2 and do the same thing, except it'll be a little different, I think. It may be a lease situation where we would identify a piece of ground in, say, Fleetmute, talking with the village people. Once we decide to do this, we'll come out here and ask them where would be the good place to, say, open up a 10-acre piece of ground so that we could subdivide it. And those people that didn't qualify, or newcomers for that matter, could get a piece of ground. Now, that wasn't required in the Act, but I think it behooves the corporation to look into something like that, because a lot of them we found didn't qualify. For instance, a lot of people in 71 were down in Bethel, or in Anchorage, or anywhere else. So the Act really restricted us to give this piece of ground to them. And that's another way that the corporation is, I think, could benefit these people that didn't qualify. And we're working on that. So we have been working on these things, and hopefully we can continue to work on some of this stuff.
What about 14C3? What policy has the Kuskokwim Corporation adopted in that respect?
Right today, at the same board meeting that I told you about, that we adopted this, people that didn't qualify, the board's feeling on that was that we would hold all 14C conveyances till later time. I believe it'll take us a year and a half to 2 years to transfer that land to the city or to villages in trust. And we do not at this time have a policy. I know there are other regions that are working on it, and we wanted to take a look and see what kind of policies they're going to come out with. And then to make a uniform policy where we can treat every village the same way. As of today, the board's feeling is to hold back on all 14C3s, at the same time realizing that that state of Alaska grants monies to the villages to put in a washateria or a school or whatever. Those are that we go to the villages and they identify exactly where this facility is to be put. We in turn make a quick claim lease to that village till 14C3 can be worked over so that the program can continue. And that's been the philosophy of the board, and it'll continue to be so till we transfer some of the lands.
Have you had any pressure from any of the councils in the Upper Kuskokwim to transfer 14C3 lands?
Yes, there's two villages, City of Aniak and City of Joachbalak. Joachbalak hasn't submitted their 14C3 plans. Aniak did at the last board meeting. And yes, we do have pressure from to convey that land.
Any reason why there's pressure from those two villages and not others?
Well, I think the City of Aniak is the largest village, as you're probably aware of, in our region. The native population, I think, is about equal, 300 and some people, or 200 and some natives, and about 200 some Caucasians. And the City of Aniak is comprised, I think, there seven city council members. Of that, I think one or two, or maybe one. The city hired an engineer or a planner to plan out the 14C3. And it's very interesting how the selection was done. The act says that 1280 would be conveyed to the cities, and they did select the 1280 and beyond that for growth, I guess, future growth. And I'd be very hesitant right today to say that we will go along with this, because I have to deal with 11 of the board members for any policy matters. But I do have my thoughts on that, but I don't think at this time I would.
What about one of the things Congress seemed to think that this land claim settlement, by setting up the corporate structure, they would provide a stream of income to Native people through the dividends, and that the corporations would provide jobs for Native people. How has the Kuskokwim Corporation worked out on both of those aspects?
I think to some degree we have failed in providing jobs, if that's what the expectation of the act was, because of the fact that there is no industry that the corporation can put in here, or anything other than stores, as we can see here, that'll make any money. And again, I emphasize that the people that had stores were here already and doing a good job of providing that kind of service. For as sawmill that we just discussed, I think something like that can be done if we can get more broader base to sell the logs. And we looked at those, and we decided at this time that there is really nothing out here that we can invest our money if we were to make a profit and continue to declare dividends to the people that we represent, other than maybe some oil minerals that we selected. And that, again, is under the Tlista Corporation, as you're aware of. So it's very limited for a corporation in a village to go into any industry or anything so that we can put the people to work. We do have that barge company that all the employees except the management is all native people. I think there's ways that the corporation and the villages can work together in for instance, sawmill or gravel operation is that the municipalities under state statutes can get some funding and in turn put a sawmill, and we'd be willing to work with the villages to supply them with the logs. We found that the study that we did on a sawmill, it would cost the corporation, if it was to do it, would cost in the neighborhood of $600,000 to $700,000 cash, upfront money for equipment. So that means when we sell the log, it would be astronomical. The price of it would be prohibitive to the natives.
What about dividends by your corporation? Can you give us the picture in recent years with respect to dividends?
Yes. We were very fortunate. We have kept TAC all the monies that were coming to us from the federal government and the state of Alaska. Those monies are now in diversified investments. We have stock portfolios in out of the state of Alaska and short-term money markets in equivalent of about $10 million cash. And from that and other business ventures that we have undertaken so far, we have declared dividends for the last 5 or 6 years, I believe, depending on the retained earnings from the corporation. Each year the board of directors can declare dividends. So far we have declared dividends of up to $100, $200 or a dollar share, or $2 share, depending on what we did that year. So for the last 5 years, I believe, we have declared dividends, and we do have 1,220 shareholders now. Those shares been divided. Some deceased, you know, and the kids get a portion of it.
Well, now everybody says that the Kuskokwim Corporation is one of the successful Native corporations, and have you any idea how many shareholders you employ in your corporation or its subsidiaries?
If you're not aware of it, our headquarters is in in Anchorage. We started out in Aniak, but we had an office in Aniak when we first started. Very quickly, we saw that it would cost a lot of money to hold meetings in Aniak and where the business center and financial center and the agencies were in Anchorage, for the board to go in to discuss the regulations that keep coming out of the federal government was just prohibitive to have an office in Aniak. We do have a land office in Aniak now. So we moved in there to Aniak, and the philosophy of the board is that any employee that we gonna hire is advertised out here in the villages, whether it be for accounting and so forth. And right today we have 1, 2, 3 people that are Caucasians, and about 4 or 5 like bookkeepers and secretaries and administrative assistants are all natives.
That's at the head office in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm. Then in our apartments, it's taken care of by local Aniak residents, and a native person, maybe 2 or 3 people, are taking care of the building, cleaning and so forth. Our biggest employees of natives is our barge company, of course. In the summertime, we employ, I believe last year was 28 different crafts, captains, and load handlers and so forth.
And that's about 4 months?
4 months operation. Yeah.
Anything else you want to add?
Well, you know, I can go on and talk for 3 days, my theories and things, but at this time, I don't think so. But I think you mentioned, I appreciate you mentioning that we are successful. I attribute that to the people and the shareholders. Remember I told you that it took a year to merge, and I continuously travel to the villages and advise them exactly where their monies are. I come out here and talk to them about 14C1, 2, and what other regulations the state or the federal government has brought out and to get their input. I realize sometimes you just can't do that, but my job, as I see it, for these people, is that kind of work. And the very important thing that people must understand to be successful, you must have a good administration. I don't care how much money you pour into something. That money will go, but the administration of the company is what makes the company go. And where the board is very hesitant. We just don't go out and buy something. The barge company, when we bought it, took us a year and a half to analyze it and so forth. And I think that makes a lot of difference, you know.
What you've now been involved in this thing since 1971. What about village corporations generally in the state? Any observations about the success they've had and their prospects for the future? I'm talking about the average village corporation that hasn't merged with other village corporations or hasn't merged with its regional corporation. What are their prospects, do you think?
As maybe you're aware of, but I do travel quite extensively through the state of Alaska, talking to the village corporations that now exist. Some of them that we look at, our company also has a service-orientated company, is Kutukwim Planning and Management, to help the villages that with their finances. And there were a dozen or so that we have been helping. Of the dozen, probably six are in very financial, critical condition.
These are 12, quite apart from the upper Kutukwim.
Right,
yeah.
That's right. We have found that literally the money, whatever monies they had coming or had in the banks right today is in... One we looked at was about $10,000 left of assets that they had when they, right today. So
they couldn't even afford an audit?
They can't, you know. It's a frightening thing. Those villages are bound to fail. There's no way that anybody, I think, can save them. The next thing, and I keep stressing this, because next thing, the creditors will be out there filing lawsuits, and the only asset then they have is the land. They'll attach that land very quickly through the courts. And they, for some reason, they maybe haven't come to realize that, some of these corporations. But in the future, I believe, I figure another 4 or 5 years, you'll see a lot of defaults or corporations going bankrupt. At least the monies that they had from the federal government and the state of Alaska, that money will be depleted.
If you care to do so, do you have any observations regarding the regional corporations?
I am a board member to Tsleil-Waututh Corporation. At the very beginning, of the act and the money that was forwarded to Tsleil-Waututh, as you and I discussed a lot of things, we weren't prepared at that time as Native people to take such a large amount of money that was dumped on us, like say, and to do something with it. As you can look back now and see what businesses they have went into, this, you can see right away that they didn't have any business plans, or they didn't look at the businesses that they were planning on buying, and you can see the mistakes. It's costing some of the regions a lot of money and a lot of headaches. It's unfortunate something like that happened. As far as some regions, they're doing very well, and some aren't. I can't quote how much money they have spent or how much they have right today, but it'll be shaky for the next 5 years. We are now in the process of doing more like what I told you to. When we buy a business, we look into it. It's a common sense, but at that time, nobody did anything like that. You know, we as Natives are very low profile in business. You don't see Native people in big businesses, and we were thrown this monster and said to work, to make it work. It is very, very difficult. I always said that Congress of the United States should have given a grace period of what is a corporation? What are you supposed to do with it? It's just like the school district when the state of Alaska put these new schools. We didn't know how to run a school system. State of Alaska, in their wisdom, said, well, we're going to give you these districts. You run them. It's the same concept. They didn't give us a teaching period, you know. I think that's a mistake as far as even the regions and the villages, especially the little villages. There should have been a grace period at that time, you know. All our monies have went to attorneys for foul-ups that was created, and it's now costing us a lot of money. And that money is really getting very scarce, you know. I don't know how we're going to survive for next 8 years, as the Act says in 1991, we'll be able to sell our stock. Some of the corporations will survive if the shareholders were to sell their stock and they have the first option. But very few. Therefore, I see people, they're selling their stock outside of the corporation because that's where the money is. If you don't have it, then I don't have it, then who else but the other people with money will come in and offer shares, to buy the shares. So to me, it's a defeating purpose. Until we do something and make amendments to the Act to rectify some of these things that we've been discussing for so long.
Okay, well, thanks very much. I'm glad we were able to do that.
Okay, Robert?
Well, that looks like the end of the meeting, Robert.